Welcome back. It is, of course, that time of year when a lot of folks make New Year's resolutions to change the way they eat, the way they live their lives, and try and get more healthy. And this is also about the time of year we welcome Dr. Wayne Westcott, the coordinator of exercise science at Quincy College, to come out and tell us how to do that. Wayne, Happy New Year, Wayne, first of all.
Happy New Year, Joe. You know how to do that. You've done it for years.
Well, it's a lot of effort, and it's a mindful thing that you have to keep at. It's
definitely a commitment, right?
It doesn't come naturally, that's for sure.
No.
Thanks for coming over. I appreciate it.
My privilege. Thanks for having me again.
Pleasure.
So honored to be here.
As always. Before we even start, I want to say congratulations to you for your honor award from the New England chapter of the American College of Sports Medicine.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
that's you. Quite an honor.
I'm not sure it was totally deserved, but I'm very appreciative and grateful that they selected me for that.
Well, it's quite an achievement for sure.
And thank you.
Well deserving, in my opinion.
Thank you.
How has the exercise science program at the college been weathering the pandemic, Wayne?
Well, last year we were quite short in our enrollment because all the fitness centers and YMCAs had closed.
Yeah.
So people think this may not be the best profession, but things have been much better this year.
Good.
We've pretty much tripled our enrollment from last year, and hope to continue doing that. As people see that, well, wait a minute, with this happening, without fitness centers, they need fitness professionals even more, whether it's working at home through Zoom or, you know, whatever method.
Yeah.
But people have suffered greatly in terms of their fitness and their health by being inactive at home so much.
It's such a dichotomy, isn't it? It's,
yes.
You know, we realize, oh, we really have to be healthy and stay fit and stay in shape. If, you know, first
right.
of all, to try not to get sick, but if
right.
we do get sick, to recover more quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly the case. Yeah. So it's been a two-edged sword in that respect. But thankfully, our program is building back, and we're doing very well. Excellent students that are coming back. I'm very impressed.
That's good to hear, for
yes.
sure. Can we talk a little bit about maybe how to get back into getting fit, you know,
Thank
if we've
you.
Been if we've been away from it for a while?
Yes.
Yeah.
And because it's the resolution time of year,
right.
I want to say without disparaging anyone that I hear a lot of advertisements for losing weight, which is good. People need to lose weight, but they need to lose it the correct way.
Yeah.
When you hear ads that say you can lose, you know, 10 pounds your first week, you can, but you don't want to.
Okay.
Just think with me for a second. Let's say that you eat about 2,000 calories per day on average.
Okay.
And let's say that you stopped eating for a whole week. You went on a total fast. You didn't eat. So that's 7 times 2,000. That's 14,000 calories you wouldn't be taking in. Well, if you did that, which would be crazy. I hope you wouldn't do that.
Okay.
You know, no one do that. But that's only 4 pounds of fat. You'd only lose 4 pounds of fat if you ate nothing. So the remainder of that weight you lose happens to be water weight, but water is not stored in your body except temporarily in your bladder, you know,
mm-hmm.
briefly. It's stored in your muscles. Mm. Muscles are about 75% water. So you're losing muscle weight, muscle mass, lean tissue. And in fact, even the example I gave isn't quite true because your body can only process, metabolize about 2 pounds of fat per week. So anything over a 2 pound weight loss per week, you're losing something other than fat. And that other is the muscle that keeps your metabolism up, keeps you burning calories, and so it just exacerbates the problem. So I tell them, don't look to lose more than a couple pounds per week,
okay.
and be sure you do some exercise along with that to maintain your fitness and your muscle mass so that you don't go down in metabolism, which means you're going to definitely gain the weight back,
yeah.
as unfortunately 90% of all successful dieters do.
Because you have to start eating again, right?
Yes, you have to go back.
You have to eat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it really sounds like the focus should not be so much on losing the weight, but really gaining the muscle, right? Kind of switch it upside down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I had to say what was the most important, regain your muscle. Joe, you know this because you know it and you study it. But people, as they age, lose approximately 1/2 to 1 pound of muscle per year, 5 to 10 pounds per decade, depending on your age and other characteristics, if you're not doing some type of resistance exercise. Well, that muscle loss is accompanied by a very significant decrease in metabolic rate, which burns most of our calories every day because most of us we're not farmers or we're not lumberjacks. And so when you lose muscle, metabolism slows down And the calories that used to keep that muscle alive and functioning, because it's very active tissue even at rest, those calories go into to fat depot, and you get what we call the creeping obesity.
Okay.
So if you really wanted to reverse that permanently, you'd say, I need to get my muscle back, so I'll do some resistance exercise along with your aerobic activity, and then healthy eating, of course. I'm not downplaying the nutrition part. That's very important.
Okay.
And this is what we teach our students. I'm sure other colleges do, but we say, you got to go out there and don't be mean about it, but say, no, don't lose 10 pounds. A week, you need to do this and this to maintain your health and fitness.
So maybe not even focus so much on the numbers, right? Of pounds.
Right.
But
yeah. Because
the activity. Yeah.
What happens in our studies? So in our 6 month studies, where people lost fat but also gained muscle. So our most important study, they lost 14 pounds of fat, but they gained 4 pounds of muscle. So you look on the scale and say, well, I've only changed by 10 pounds.
Right.
They tell I can do 10 pounds a week. I did 10 pounds in half a year. Yeah. But you actually had a change in your body composition and your health and fitness and your personal appearance of 18 pounds, 14 pounds less fat, which is good, and 4 pounds more muscle, which is really good. And the follow-up to that study was a six-month, what we call a maintenance study to see how they did in the next 6 months when they went back to normal eating. Like you said, you can't diet forever.
Right.
And the only study ever, Joe, only study ever published, out of the thousands of studies published, that they not only didn't regain weight at all, they maintained their weight, but they actually continued to gain muscle and lose fat in the maintenance period. That's never happened before. So when you do things right, you get more permanent results.
Yeah, you talk about some of the ads that you've heard and seen, and some of the ones that I've seen are focusing kind of on the psychological aspects of weight loss and healthy fitness. Is that something that you teach at the college? Is that something that we should be aware of?
We probably don't teach it as much as we should, but we certainly do. We have done studies on that with the leading exercise psychologist, fitness psychologist in the world, Dr. James Anessi in Atlanta, and he does the psychological information.
Yeah.
It's way over my head.
I just
do the physiological. But they're absolutely right. And we're trying to build that more and more into our program.
Okay.
Yes, the psychological aspect, the emotional aspect, extremely important.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
How do you know, Wayne, if you need to get healthy? You know, I mean, what benchmark do you say, I've put on weight, I'm inactive. How do you know when it's not healthy?
All right. This is not meant to be serious, but the best thing to do is put the bathroom scale away, just stand in front of the bathroom mirror after you come out of the shower, jump a little. If it jiggles, it's fat.
Okay.
Now, that's tongue in cheek, of course.
All right,
but really, what people need to do is not so much look at this scale, because let's say that I weigh the same now as I did at age 20. And let's say that was 5 decades ago, okay? And let's say I didn't strength train.
Yep.
And let's say I'm losing 5 pounds, at least 5 pounds, it would be more than that, but at least 5 pounds per decade of muscle.
So
I could weigh the same, but in those 5 decades, I've lost 25 pounds of muscle. And if I weigh the same, I've added 25 pounds of fat.
Gotcha.
That's a 50-pound change, even though the body weight and the BMI is the same. So we encourage people, and we do this for free for anyone, come to our fitness center at Quincy College, and we'll do a body composition to how much muscle you have, how much fat, what's your percent body fat is. A female in good condition would be under 25% body fat, and a male in good condition, like you, would be under 15% body fat.
Okay.
And if you're above those numbers, regardless of your weight, it's an indication, well, maybe I need to lose a little fat and add a little more muscle because I made these changes.
All right, so there are benchmarks to meet and
guidelines absolutely.
To follow. Okay.
That are well established and not just based on the weight, because the scale doesn't tell you what makes up that weight.
Right, exactly. During the pandemic, of course, a lot of folks, as you say, put a halt to all kinds of going to the gym or physical activity. Can you kind of pick up where you left off if you haven't done it for a while?
No. Okay. And that goes back to your first question. In addition to the nutritional aspects and the diet and the weight control, you need to start slowly.
Okay.
What happens, and I'm guilty of this just like most everybody else is, I've been in shape, and all of a sudden you're traveling or you have a cold or the flu or something, and you come back and you say, I'm going to pick up right where I left off, and you get injured, and then you're laid up for twice as long as you should have been. If you come back, say, I'm going to go back at half what I did, or if it hasn't been too long, 3/4 of what I used to do.
Okay.
Instead of bench pressing 100 pounds, I'm going to bench press 75,
okay.
or whatever it might be. If I'm, instead of running 2 miles, I'm going to run a mile or a mile and a half, and build back slowly, then your system has a chance to adapt and adopt, and you move farther ahead. Otherwise, you're finding this up and down injury or yes. the psychological, gosh, I couldn't do it. I'm really out of breath. I'm not going to do this anymore. It's not working.
Right.
I'm going to go bowling instead. Nothing against bowling, but it's just not quite the same.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And you get it and you set back, and you say, gosh, you know, I was there and I'll never get back. But you will get back.
It's all about patience, patience. I know you know that because you practice that. Yes.
Yeah, it's not easy, and it changes as you get older too.
Oh, yes.
You know, what about for younger kids, Wayne? You know, when do you kind of start letting them be more aware of what they should be doing?
We have a course at the college that I wish every college had. Yeah. Youth and Senior Fitness. Now, in the YMCA days, you remember we used to do all those youth research studies. The people in the entire world, Dr. Fangenbaum, who worked with me, who put youth strength training on the map, that children need to strength train. Say, oh, no, it's bad for the bones. No, children who strength train, 9-year-old girls who strength train, added 6.4% to their bone mineral density in that year of life. 9-year-old girls who didn't strength train, because they're growing, they still had some, they added 1.4%. It doesn't hurt your bones. It helps your bones. All types of physical activity is best for children. And they're the ones that respond the fastest because they're going through normal growth and maturation. So they really need to be active and not at home, doing nothing. They need to do something in that home of a physical nature, or they miss out on that. And again, it is age related. Those are times when you get the most benefit.
What do you think about these electronic fitness apps and all these gadgets that can track your breathing and your walking and your heart rate? Do you think they're worthwhile?
Yes, I do. Okay. And, you know, older people like me, we go by the old method. You know, I take my heart rate, I know this, I know that, check my blood pressure, all those type of things. But for the younger generation who's so into the technology, I think it's right up their alley. It fits in so perfectly. It's right on their phone, and it's very motivating. I think the technology is extremely good. In fact, our national organization, when you just mentioned the American College of Sports Medicine, does a survey every year of the 10 most popular fitness trends of that year, and right at the very top is the technology, exercise technology.
Is that right?
That's the hottest item, and again, that's good because we're reaching generations that grew up with this and otherwise might not be as interested in fitness because it wasn't as part of much of their lifestyle as it was when you and I grew up. We did a lot more things physically than electronically.
Well, it's so much of it is interactive now too. You know, we see these devices where you can virtually train with somebody through an electronic device on a treadmill while you're running in Hawaii while you're actually in, Quincy.
I know. And this is something we're trying to move our program a little more towards this for the students who say, I really think it'd be good for me to start training people virtually or whatever. I'd like to try that because of the situations. And we're moving in that direction.
Really?
Yes. I'm not the one to lead that. But the younger professors who really know how that technology works.
Is it important to have a partner, like a workout partner or motivational partner?
I think it is. Yeah. You know, I was telling you before the show, my friend Dick and I train together. We've done it for decades. Yeah. Every Saturday, we go for a hike or a bike, a hard hike and a hard bike. It's just, we always look for that. Now, during the week, we can't always train together, but to train at least occasionally with someone else and enjoy their company and friendly competition, even if you will, or push, I shouldn't say it, it's not competition, but just pushing each other, a little bit.
So there's a social aspect to it.
It is.
Also,
psychological and social, absolutely.
Yeah, mind over matter.
Yeah. so when I'm not feeling like pushing the pace, Dick said, we got to go a little faster and vice versa, it really helps.
Sure.
I'm so glad we did that today.
Yeah. For some older folks, we should talk a little bit about some good ways for them to stay in shape, stay
absolutely.
Active, stay healthy, and stay safe at the same time.
Yes,
right?
That same course, the Youth and Senior Fitness. The seniors, they need this so desperately because although they were active, my wife is active with a horse, that type of thing, or farmers.
Okay.
They weren't always sitting in an office, but they didn't do strength training.
Yeah.
And so this is the key for older adults, is to rebuild the muscle and bone that you've lost during that aging process.
Oh, you lose bone also.
You lose bone at a much faster rate than muscle.
Really?
People lose muscle. When they're over 50, they lose muscle 5 to 10% per decade, but they lose bone, especially postmenopausal women at 20 to 30% per decade. Oh, that's my. 2 to 3% per year. We wonder why, you know, basically one out of two women and one out of four men have bone issues and even fractures that lead to, you know, medical problems.
I see.
When they're over age 60.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the strength training is the real key for older adults. It's key for everybody.
That helps with bone also, bone building?
Yes, yes. We did a 9-month study in which the participants who didn't do anything, they lost 1% of their bone in the 9 months. And then the participants who did the strength training took a little extra protein mm-hmm. to help build the bone.
Yep.
They increased their bone by 1%. Now, that was back in 2009 when people, the medical said, you can't do that. We said, well, yes, you can. Now, numerous studies have shown that.
Yeah.
But we did the, remember we had UCF Quincy Hospital here? And,
yes.
And we did the bone density test right over there. And the radiologist said, Wayne, don't be discouraged. You only gained 1%. They didn't lose 1%. That's
right.
That's a, you know, a big change. I said, yeah, okay. I guess you're right. But now we know how to do that even a little better. But yes, you can build bone and muscle at any age, but the bone comes along a little more slowly.
Okay, okay.
You lose it faster and you gain it less fast.
I wasn't aware of that. That's yes. just something else to be aware of.
Yes, it's a good thing to know,
yeah.
right?
Well, it's good to know that the strength training helps both. You know, you don't have to do something separate.
It does. Now, yeah. we also do, of course, we do cardio and aerobic activity
yeah.
Along with it. We're a 50-50 split.
Okay.
But most people understand, yeah, I should go for a walk. My doctor said I had to walk. Of course you should. But don't forget the resistance exercise.
Okay. Do you need to sweat? Do you think you need to sweat to get a good workout in?
Well, that's a sweating is how hot you are. If you've been to our fitness facility, Joe, we keep it fairly cool because we have mostly adults and older adults
yeah.
in there, middle-aged and older adults. And so we keep it down around, you know, about 65 degrees.
Okay.
So they don't sweat too much, but they get a good workout. But the main thing with older adults, you don't want them to overheat. So we
okay.
keep it cool. It's a little tough when you're an instructor in there because
yes.
you have the sweatshirt on. But when you're exercising, you say, oh, it feels really good.
Okay.
So they don't sweat too much. But you know, if you go out on a warm day and you go for a run or something like that, of course you're going to sweat, yes.
Yeah. What about supplements, Wayne, and vitamins? Is that something that should be part of a fitness regimen?
You know, we haven't done any research on that specifically, but my wife's physician, my physician, they you know, they say, you know, your B12's down a little bit on the test, your
yeah.
vitamin D's down, so we like you to take some. So I think, yeah, I'm certainly agreeable to that.
Okay.
But we have done a lot of research on protein.
Yes.
And as we age, we do not process protein as well. We do not assimilate protein as well, and yet we need it just as much because that's the only way you can build muscle and bone. So as people age, they actually need a little more protein in their diet,
mm-hmm.
not less. And the RDA has always been a little bit low. So in our studies, we do a little higher than the RDA, and we get excellent results whenever we compare adding protein to the training as not adding protein.
Yeah.
We always get better results, significantly better results when we add a little
okay.
protein.
For folks, yeah. just RDA, recommend a daily allowance, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. recommend daily allowance, yes. yes.
I like, always right. like to clarify the acronyms because
yes,
folks
yeah,
what
sorry.
Does that mean?
Yeah. Yes, and you know, we're not doing anything dangerous or anything like that.
Of course. Yeah.
We only go by the prescriptions of Harvard Medical School, but
yep.
they've advocated higher protein intake.
Okay.
We agree with that.
It's always good to see you. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
It goes so fast.
I know.
Thank you, Joe. You always ask the best questions.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Happy, healthy new year.
You too.
Thank you very much.